Welcome to the FemTech Health Podcast. Today, we're joined by Erica DeJosa, the CEO and founder of Momwell and a maternal mental health specialist. We're going to dive into all things related to maternal mental health, the challenges of motherhood, and the importance of self-care. You're going to learn about Erica's journey from psychotherapist to maternal mental health advocate, the impact of the pandemic on maternal mental health, and the power of virtual therapy services. All right, let's get started with today's show.
I'm here today with Erica DeJosa. She is the CEO and founder of Momwell. She is also a maternal mental health specialist, and she is the author of a brand new book, Releasing the Mother Load, Redefining the Expectations of Motherhood. Erica, I met you in San Francisco at the Maternal Summit, and it was just so wonderful, and it was such a wonderful experience. And I just am so excited to have you on our show today. It means so much to me. I work in the pelvic health world. We talk all the time about maternal mental health with our prenatal and postpartum moms. And I just love the work that you're doing. So will you share with us all about Momwell, how you got started in this work?
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I do see so many parallels in the work that we do. And I'm sure you hear a lot of the things that people come to us for because you often treat them postpartum. And you know, whether there's been trauma or there's trouble feeding or all the things I'm sure come up. It's so interesting how I got here. I feel like I was in children and family practice as a psychotherapist, kind of plugging my way along after my master's degree. And then I entered into motherhood. I had three boys in the span of 3.5 years and felt like I was thrown into the deep end. Like, I had no idea what I was in for, and I had really romanticized ideals of what I thought motherhood would be. And then I went through my own postpartum depression and anxiety, which really blindsided me and kind of brought me to a halt. As a clinician, I literally work with anxiety and depression for a living. So there's a lot of, I should know the skills, I should know how to pull myself out of this. And then there was also like so much perfectionism and just wanting to do things right and feeling like I was failing by admitting I needed help. And I didn't even know that maternal mental health was a specialty. I hadn't heard about it in my years of training. I hadn't heard about it in my schooling. And it wasn't until my own experience that I really niched down to understand and realize maternal mental health, like, the transition into motherhood is such a high-risk time for the onset of mental health challenges, whether those are like clinically diagnosable or even just the stressors of adjusting to such a big change in our life. And yet nobody talks about it or nobody prepares us for it. I had like how many hours of like labor and delivery classes did I sit through to prepare myself for like a 1, maybe 2 day event? But I'm in this role now for the rest of my life, and nobody told me or prepared me or warned me for it. And so I niched down in this space, took to social media to just spread awareness and educate. And this was like the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. And then the platform just really organically took off on Instagram, and the podcast started around that time, and kind of been full speed ahead ever since. The platform has opened up opportunities for the book that just came out. We're rolling out across 15 states in the U.S. with our therapy services, specialized maternal mental health services. And it's just such an exciting and wild, wild ride.
So tell everybody, too, that you already are pretty situated in Canada, right? You have more providers in the Canadian region.
Yeah. So I am Toronto-based. And so we started rolling out across provinces in Canada, most of the provinces between like Ontario and British Columbia, the West Coast, and realized that there was such a strong need in the U.S. for a number of reasons that we can sure unpack today, but also because so much of my community is 70% of them are in the U.S. And so I'm constantly getting referrals and questions for treatment and hearing about these maternal care deserts that they're experiencing, and know that I have a solution that can help with that problem. And so we actually rebranded. We used to be Happy as a Mother, and we rebranded into Momwell about a year and a bit ago now, and shifted into startup mode, where we are now fundraising and rolling out our launch in the US. So it's exciting and wild times. Yeah.
No, I love it. And I, you know, we'll jump right into Momwell, because I want you to just explain, you know, how it works, you know, what is the platform? I mean, it has so many wonderful pieces to it. And mm-hmm. I think that's really why I think it's so important, is because it has so many pieces and so many layers to it. Because so many times, you know, a prenatal or a postpartum mom, you know, in my field of pelvic health, and we're seeing them prenatal, postpartum, we're screening them, we're kind of making sure, hey, do you have any past histories of, you know, a depression or anxiety? Are your pain levels been so high that maybe you have, you know, maybe more, you know, history towards something because you've right. got back pain or pelvic pain, et cetera. Mm. But at the same time, I think sometimes people get nervous, right, too, or they get so overwhelmed, they have this baby. And I love the way your platform is set up, because it lets entry into this in so many ways. So will you share with everybody how that works?
Yeah, thank you for recognizing that. We work really hard at being where mom is. And so one of the things that I realized really early on, and that I even felt in my own experience, was that asking for help is difficult. It's really difficult because we're often in the mindset that we're asking for help because we are lacking, or we can't do it all, or like it's admitting that we are flawed or failing in some way. And then there's a lot of stigma still around even terms like postpartum depression or anxiety. I would say less than there has been in the past, but still it is a like kind of clinical language that people want to like repel and push away from. So when we are on Instagram making these what I call psychoeducational graphics, like teaching them about their experience, it is in such a like low stakes, non-threatening environment where it puts their experience into language and helps them to understand. And then they share it with their mom friend, or they share it with their partner. And that's really how our platform organically grew. We have over 500,000 followers across social media platforms. We reach over 4 million moms organically a month through our content. And it's really because we've taken some of the clinical language or even some of the research around motherhood and distilled it down into really tangible and approachable ways for moms to ingest it. And like maybe all she can muster is a couple of social posts in that day, because that's where she's at, right? And then there's also like, I'm a big believer in that not everybody will need the one-on-one level of therapy care. So we offer like what I would call a range, or sort of like a stepped care model, where from free self-paced light touch interventions through to self-paced e-courses and things that are a little bit more involved, but you're going to come away with a solid skill set. Again, like a one-off fee and transaction, and also not maybe as intimidating as a one-to-one therapy appointment, or maybe just the little bit of a boost you need because maybe you don't need the one-on-one therapy, up through till that one-to-one therapy support where like, you know, I'm really struggling, or I just really want somebody to help me like stitch together what I'm going through. Like I really need to understand my experience. And so we have a variety of ways that we support mom and partner and families, and a variety of like at a variety of price points then also. Yeah.
So I, you know, just, I'm just going to jump to this because I just want people to grab hold of this. If you pop into momwell.com, you will see all the different easy ways to enter in. So do not be afraid. No one's going to, you know, breathe down your neck. Oh, you have to have a one-on-one therapy appointment. There's actually ways that you can start to even understand, oh, do I have mom rage? Oh, am I actually depressed? Or is this just because I'm tired? Oh, am I excessively tired? Do I need to come up with a sleep plan? I mean, the way you did this is absolutely such a non-threatening, decreases barriers for women that I just feel like, I don't know, in our society right now, we need this easier way to sort of enter in And then if we need it, oh, here's this great opportunity, right? But I think the gentle way that you set this up, it's really empowering for women. It helps them feel really safe because a woman can't get to the next place in her life unless she feels safe. And this, I feel like, really drives this whole, hey, you're safe here. Hey, you want to talk to other moms? There's a community of other moms you can talk to in your region and your area. But then there's little ways to be like, oh, there's free things. So some of our people who aren't ready to like say, I want to spend money. I just want people to understand this is not, oh my gosh, I got to go to therapy, because that scares people. And like you said earlier, it almost makes people feel like, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. I'm not a good mom. I'm not a good person. I should have never been a mom. I mean, I have a lot of high level professionals I work with who, you know, had a postpartum depression or anxiety, and it's really difficult, you know, because we're sort of told we should know everything because we work in this world, you know, of prenatal postpartum care. And so it's frightening for them to admit that. And so your platform so nicely just helps people enter in at different spaces to realize like, oh, maybe I am exhausted. Maybe I do need to learn how to ask for help. And so tell us a little bit about some of these courses that you were talking about before, because I think they will help people, you know, realize like how easy it is to enter in.
Mm-hmm. So I have a variety of solo courses that we offer, and then I also have some partnered ones with another maternal mental health platform called Psyched Mummy. We're good friends, and we just like to host things together. And we talk about like boundary setting with family after baby. We talk about mom rage, overstimulation, feeling touched out and too much noise in motherhood. I have some courses on back to work. So like emotionally preparing to go back to work, or, you know, finding the right daycare fit for your family. Postpartum anxiety self-paced course. And it's just really important for me to have these types of content. Like we're raising right now to put all of this into a dynamic app where these tools can really like come to life and be dynamic and support you in a way that feels like a therapist in your pocket, where you can like pop a skill up, you know, and access to this when you need it is something that's so important to me, because often moms have their like breaking moments in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. and they like need something in that moment. And there's no clinician going to be available, but if there's a podcast episode that can help to soothe, or if they're going through a course that's reaffirming to them they aren't the only one that feels this angry when baby wakes up six times a night, or, you know, helps to normalize that experience, then they feel less alone and also have some hope that they can, this will pass and that they will make it through this. And then there's also this piece where I see a lot of moms sort of white knuckle and grit their teeth and think, like, this will pass. I just need to like get to this milestone and these dark feelings or this anxiety will go away. And it like pains me, because these are the most treatable and like successfully treated mental health challenges, because they are so situational to postpartum. That like, if you feel that you are not enjoying motherhood, like, no, you're not going to enjoy every minute. That's unrealistic. But if you find that you're just not having moments of joy, to me, that like pains me, because I know that you can. I know that you can. Like, when I had my experience, and I actually went on a medication for my depression and anxiety when I had my like breakdown turned breakthrough, which I talk about really candidly in my book. I went on medication and the clouds parted and the sun came out and there was like music and I enjoyed life. I enjoyed my kids more. So there's so many things, whether that's medication, whether that's therapy, whether that's the podcast or whatever tool it is, that can start to help you feel like yourself again.
No, I appreciate that so much, because I think that helps people have hope too. And then if they're not feeling like in the realm of what they should feel, and that joy is a huge part of it, right? And yes, we're going to have good times and bad times, and some nights are way bad with three little kids. But at the same time, then helping people realize, hey, there's a community out there who's present for you. And I think that's the beauty of the support group part of what you do as well, is mm-hmm. because then people can connect with that part of it too in geographical areas, or maybe with other women who are experiencing exactly what they're experiencing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're really known for what's called our Invisible Load series. And this is actually what the book was sort of birthed out of, where I would take a physical task like laundry or feeding and unpack all of the labor kind of underneath the iceberg of that task. And the comments that I get, or the feedback that I get, is I've never felt so seen. I've never felt so understood. And it's really taught me the value of, like, not having to fix it. Like, maybe I can't alleviate the pain, or maybe our child is going through a sleep regression, or maybe we are recovering from a really traumatic birth, or, like, there are certain pains that I cannot alleviate for you. But I can see you, and I can see what you're going through, and I can name that, and I can validate it. And I hadn't realized how invisible moms had truly felt. Like, Peanut had released their study that they do, and they're, for those who don't know, like a mom socializing app where you make friends. And 90% of mothers reported feeling invisible, unacknowledged, undervalued. And so even the power of being seen by a graphic that can say, hey, like, you're in this, and I can, like, it's valid. It's a lot. You're carrying a lot. Like, be kind to yourself. Be compassionate with yourself today, because this is unrealistic for any one person to carry. And that in itself can be like a spark or a trigger to get help, or to take better care of our needs, or to just feel understood.
I love that. We're such visual people. Mm-hmm. And so when some things like that just catch us, right? So that it helps us move forward in something that we might, you know, be caught in. So what's interesting to me is all of this kind of started during the pandemic. So mm-hmm. share with me, do you feel like it helped people during that time frame as well, you know, have more connection and more togetherness, because so many people were not together?
Yeah, the pandemic was a wild time for especially moms who were expecting, because of the constant changing regulations in hospitals and worrying whether their partner was going to be in delivery with them, or they tested positive and then they couldn't see their baby for XYZ days. And like, the pandemic brought on a level of stress and uncertainty around entering motherhood that was like unprecedented. It was a pretty wild time. And the ripple effects of that are still being felt with clients. Like, they'll come in and they will have had their child in the pandemic, and maybe they're preparing to have a second now or a third now. And the trauma of raising children alone with no support, depending on how, you know, locked down your state or province was and like what the regulations were, it is put just another layer of complication into this already very challenging time to adjust to. So I do think that, like, we have people come on our workshops and it's live and they're in the chat like, oh my gosh, you feel this way too, and this was my experience, and oh, you know, my partner couldn't be at my birth, and just find some like community and knowing that, like, this is unfair and this is wild and we shouldn't, you know, have to face this, but find some community and support in knowing that, I don't know, we can find some strength in each other. And that has continued, and it looks different. And I feel like there are different needs from the platform now that people are sort of out living their lives mm-hmm. more. But our goal to put maternal mental health support in every mother's pocket is still so valid and stands, because moms are often not trapped at home and they've got a baby asleep and they still need support. So it's morphed a little bit, but yeah, still very relevant.
Okay, so Erica, tell me,
you know, we'll just unpack this really quick about the U.S. and Canada. And why do you think all of a sudden this is just going crazy in the U.S. or why it's sort of ballooned or blossomed? Like, give me your guts about that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. There's a lot. There's a lot going on in the U.S. Like, one unrelated, whether it's political or not political, is like the lack of leave. So here in Toronto, I got 12 months leave. And like, I mean, it's a privilege and it's amazing. It's also not as ideal as everybody thinks it is. Like, it's to a cap of, it's 55% of your income to a cap of $45,000 a year. So it works out to about $21,000 or $22,000 for the entire year that you're off. But it's something. And your 12 months are reserved and you're guaranteed your job back. So it's certainly a privilege. And so knowing that you're going to have your position and having some of that certainty and not having to go back when your child is still newborn or infant if you don't want to. So that's a really big piece. That was a real education I got swiftly when I started my platform, was the variety of leave that people can take or can afford to take or are afforded through their role, and what that means to separate from your infant at 6, 8, 12 weeks, right? So that in itself, like, we see rates of postpartum depression and anxiety being diagnosed sort of peaking around month 3. And it's like, is that because that's when we're transitioning back to work? Is that because, like, what are the contributing factors around mom that lead to that being the time, you know? So there's definitely the leave conversation. And now we have a very real mental health conversation around lack of access to care and even potentially fertility treatments if you're wanting to expand your family. And all of these things have an impact on mental health. So maybe you were prone to anxiety, or maybe you had a traumatic birth experience before, or you had a loss or a stillborn, and you're pregnant again, and you're in a state where they won't act unless, you know, you are at death's door. Talk about adding fuel to an already trauma-filled, anxiety-filled body, right? So the complications here when we're having to navigate these boundaries and different political fields do nothing but just add more stress in an already stressful time for women and for mothers. So those are a few of the things that I think for sure. And then beyond that, if we take a step, one more broad step back, we are mothering in a culture or a society that has unrealistic expectations of our mothering generation. So in 1950, 25% of mothers worked outside of the home. 75 years, not even 75 years later, 87% of mothers work outside of the home. And yet the majority of the domestic and care work still sits on their shoulders. So they, you know, we've got these two income earning households. We're expected to go out and sort of bring in income as our partners do. And yet there's been very little redistribution of the keeping house tasks and the care tasks. And that is a pressure cooker for a maternal mental health crisis. Like, that is a major problem in amongst everything else going on. And it's actually like a key component of why I focus so much on domestic labor and finding that equality in the home, because I see the pressure that it puts on families as well. So there's a few big key factors I feel like are at play.
I do think, you know, during the pandemic, that was such a challenging time too for a lot of moms who were home with new babies. And then, you know, in the U.S., if they didn't have, you know, long-term maternity leave or maybe only 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something like that. And yet all of a sudden, everyone was home. And, you know, people are trying to resume their work from home at 8 weeks postpartum, you know, as best they could, or maybe their job whole situation completely changed. And suddenly we had family systems that were you know, sort of mesh together that where normally people are leaving the house and kids are going to daycare, you know, and all of these things. So it even changed it even more, I think, you know, to challenge the whole mental health component because people were together so much that maybe had never been together, you know, that much with their kids at home too. Because I had so many moms who had terrible daycare issues. So, you know, suddenly they couldn't work as a pelvic PT. They needed to be home because they had no daycare. And suddenly maybe their husband was home trying to work as well. Kids at home, a lot of.
I had a kindergartner during that time and they wanted him to do like asynchronous learning. He was like 4.5 or 5. And then we're trying to work and like, are we going to have daycare for the other two? Are we not? It was a really wild time. One thing it did do for us is it brought my husband home from going downtown Toronto. He used to be in banking, and it brought him home from 12-hour days commuting into the city to being around more. And it allowed him to see the day in and day out of the kids, and it allowed us to redistribute some of the labor. And it actually created space for me to build my company that I wouldn't have been able to do if my time was spoken for doing all of that caregiving. So for us, it moved things around or reestablished them in a different way. And he's co-founder and works full time in the company now. And we've retired him from corporate life. We joke and we're full time in the startup. And in one way, the pandemic allowed that for us. But juggling all the other craziness with little children was a wild, wild time. Yeah.
I totally understand. It is definitely a challenge. And it just shows you, though, the good things that can come out of change, though, too, right? Like, we're such resilient people. We can come up with other things and other ways to actually say, oh, let's make this into a good thing. And look at what happened to your company during this time. It just went wild.
Yeah.
It went wild. Okay, so I just want to ask you a couple of things. Talk about your book a little bit. And had you known you were going to write this all along? Did it just sort of feel like one day, you know, because I feel like so many of, you know, CEOs and founders of company work such passionate work. You know, sometimes I just like to know, oh, did you always know you were going to write it? Or is this something that just came?
I have always had a, like, desire to write a book. But it was not something like, I'm not a trained writer. I was, you know, working as a therapist. It wasn't something that I had really set out on a path towards. And then when the platform really grew, I was actually approached by a literary agent this was during the pandemic, and she had just had her second, and she'd been following me for some time and felt really supported by the platform. And she's like, have you ever considered writing a book? And so we chatted a bit, and she had posed this question, like, if you could write one book and leave it out in the world, like, what would it be? Like, what would you want to say? And that's where releasing The Motherlode came from. I did not niche down in maternal mental health thinking that I would become an advocate for women's, you know, challenges and issues, but as I've spent time in this work, I've begun to kind of see the slices of things that contribute to our, like, mental health or the lack thereof, and seeing this invisible load as something that we kind of co-opt ourselves into. One of my challenges was that I associated these caregiving tasks and this domestic labor with what it meant to be a good mom. So it was so difficult to hand it over to my partner or let him have ownership over it in his own way, because it felt like it was a reflection of how I was in my role. So I had a lot of unlearning to do to be able to free myself of some of this invisible load and mental load so that I could create space to, like, build a company or do something else for myself and my own identity. And so this book is really helping you understand what the invisible load is and the cognitive mental labor, and then helping to guide you through unlearning the norms and the assumptions that cause us to default into these roles to begin with. Because it's not like my husband and I looked at each other on day one and were like, okay, you're going to shoulder all of this without question. Like, that wasn't something we consciously established. But as I kind of tried to claw my way out, climb my way out of this dark place postpartum, I realized that carrying everything in the way that I was not sustainable. And so I take you on this journey of reevaluating the load that you're carrying. What of it is essential? What of it is not? And of the things that are essential, what can be shared with a partner or a support system versus what do you have to carry? Ultimately, with the aim of helping moms take back some ownership over their time and have like plant some little seeds to like permission to dream or have things for ourselves outside of motherhood. And if you don't want that and you are wholly satisfied with motherhood, that is also incredible. But one of the things that I find is that a lot of the messaging socially is that we should be satisfied with motherhood and we shouldn't desire anything more than that. And to do that is like selfish on our part or putting ourselves first in some way. And so helping us find some space that we can do things for ourselves and retain our identity was such a big part of the goal. Yeah.
It's amazing. I haven't read it all yet, but I've sort of skimmed some. So I appreciate it. It's going to be, I think it's going to be a really big difference maker for so many people because, I mean, and I'll ask you this, where do you think you got these, these unconscious things in your mind about what a woman should be like when she's a mother?
Yeah. I use this analogy in the book where we have this filing drawer. Like, imagine pulling on this drawer and it sort of infinitely scrolls and pulls out, and it's got this label of motherhood on it. And in that drawer are all of the memories and images and messages that we have observed about what it means to be a mom. So maybe it was the mom on the TV show that we watched growing up. Maybe it was our mom or our grandma. Maybe it was movies. Maybe it was the comment that somebody said to your mom when you were at the grocery store with her. All of these things get stored into this cabinet and they're associated with what it means to be a good mom for us. The challenge is that we've been accumulating these messages our entire lives. And when we step into motherhood and we go to actually try to use anything of value in there, it is so full of junk and contradictory messages and like this massive junk drawer of motherhood mail that we didn't even subscribe to or say that we wanted and certainly may not like align with our values at this stage of our life. And so it's society, it's family of origin, it's a bunch of different things. And in the book, I walk you through, okay, like let's pull this one out. Is this a belief that we're going to shred or are we going to keep it? Is this in line with our values or is it not? And then if it is, let's tuck it away neatly and we'll figure out how we're going to apply that into what it means to be a good mom for us. And if it's not, like shred that sucker. We don't need to carry that around with us anymore. It's a really empowering way to tune into your values and mother in a way that is in line and true to you versus everybody else.
So I love it that your husband and you work together. So tell me how that works for you because you're the boss.
Yeah, surprisingly well. As I had the book party, I keep hearing from people who were at this like launch event. Oh my gosh, it's so cute. We had a photographer there. She just sent me all the photos. And there's this photo of him just like beaming ear to ear watching me at the conversation of this launch event. And everyone was like, he was so proud of you. He couldn't stop smiling the whole night. And it's really sweet. We have an interesting dynamic because he's like MBA, finance background, very much in like our regulatory, legal, financial back end of the business type of role. And I'm very much clinical, marketing, forward facing. And so it really works. And he doesn't have a desire to be in the spotlight and kind of just like lets me do my thing. And we also really know each other's strengths and kind of give each other authority over our own like places in the company, if that makes sense. So if he's going to make a suggestion about something legal or financial, like I'm going to trust and believe him. Like that is not my forte. So we've got just a really good balance. And surprisingly, I'm in meetings all day long that we work like 20 feet from each other and hardly ever see each other in the day. So you would think we would like bump into each other a lot and get sick of each other, but it's actually the opposite. We don't see each other very much at all.
I love it. Well, I ask only because my husband and I are in business together as well. And he's just like what your husband is. He's sort of that back end, the financial, that very, you know, and I'm definitely on the other side of it. And it is definitely like, you know, we've been doing this a really long time. And it absolutely, you know, grows you in your relationship and grows you in your work, because it just opens up parts of you that maybe you wouldn't ever share with other people, you know, your partner in certain ways, because, you know, you're being challenged in different things and you have to work through a lot of things that are going to grow your company. And you can't grow your company unless you're willing to grow. And so I always look at that too, especially when you have couples together, because, you know, you have to keep growing to grow a company. So yeah. That being said, share with me, how do you handle adversity in your company right now? Like, what is your way that you go about doing that so it helps other founders and people in your position?
Yeah. Oh, this is a really interesting one, because I feel like we're going through a bit of, I keep saying wild, like a roller coaster of a time right now. And I don't know if you've seen like the startup graph, I think it was shared by like YC, and it talks about like the trough of sorrow and all of like these hills and valleys that we take in entrepreneurship. And like being with my partner, one, it, I think is really helpful for me because he understands the amount of pressure that I'm under. If I didn't have a partner who was in the high stakes and like couldn't see what I'm up against, that would be really difficult, because I would feel so isolated. Like I think about solo founders who might not have that trusted co-founder to be able to have those heart-to-heart conversations with. And that would feel, it already feels isolating to me, but to not have a co-founder to confide in and go through that with would be really difficult. So the fact that we're in it together for me helps to ground me on hard days. We have this like running joke, initially more so probably in early startup life, though we're still kind of early startup life, but I would have like a number of days on the wall where I hadn't cried about something. And then I would like go into him like crying out of frustration of something. And he would just like put up his hand and wipe off the invisible board of tears on the wall. Like, you know, oh, we made it 7 days this time or whatever. And like we joke about it because it is a roller coaster of a journey. And I don't know, it is probably the most challenging thing I've ever done, because the amount of mindset work you have to do on yourself to not give up and to be resilient and to think that you are worth going out there and like, I don't know, raising capital for your company or building this business and doing this thing requires so much overcoming of like negative beliefs, depending on what your upbringing was, and so much mindset work, that's probably been the hardest part for me, is just like keeping rooted, you know, in those really difficult moments. Like not like you can have your pity party for a moment, but like not staying in that place. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting you brought up a roller coaster ride, because you have three sons, I have three sons, and as we're raising these three sons, we kind of, because both of my husband and I were self-employed forever and have worked apart. And then early on in the pandemic, he kind of came in and started working a lot more with me. So it's kind of funny you brought that up. But we have this analogy in our family about the roller coaster, you know, and it's always like, you know, if I get on the roller coaster, he's on, we jokingly call it the platform. He's on the platform and he's either clapping for me or encouraging me. And then he'll tell me, I think you need to get off the roller coaster and stand back on the platform right now. Like we need to get back on even ground, right? But most of the time, not either of us are both ever up on the, you know, the roller coaster. One is up and somebody's helping, you know, and so, but then when we had kids, it changed all that, because then it was this crazy thing of like, both he and I joke, you know, when our kids are going through things now as adults, right? Or even teenagerhood, we'd be like, don't get on the roller coaster with them. Stay back here on the platform. Stand on, we're the ones on the steady ground. We have to keep everything. So our whole life has been this whole funny just thing about the roller coaster. So when you were talking about it, I was like, this is truly the way we look at it. You know, sometimes we're like, hey, our job as parents to our kids, right, is to like clap and cheer and lift them up. They ride the roller coaster. Don't get on, right? Mm-hmm. We watch them. We praise them. We like help them. But at the same time, but then, you know, if my husband and I do get on, we joke a lot about like, hey, you just got on the roller coaster.
Yeah.
Come back down and get on the platform. But you're just going to have days like that, right? Where sometimes you cry and all this stuff happens. So, but the resiliency, yeah. And it's lovely that you have a partner like that, that gets you and that wants to be in that deep relationship with you in this, because it's definitely work to do what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And well, he's like a bit of a different breed in terms of communicator and like temperament and stuff. Like I can imagine that this level of stress on a relationship could have a very negative impact depending on, you know, where you're at in your life and in your relationship. But it's funny because like in real life with the kids, I don't even like to ride like water slides, let alone roller coasters. I'm so risk averse, like in physical real life, that to be taking such high stakes moves in the company, I don't know, that actually lights me up. That's fun. But like the real life risk, not so much. I'll always be the bag holder on the platform, just sort of observing everybody. But it's the early days of getting a company up and running are really, really difficult. And I think that it's just important for listeners to like know that. I think we look at a lot of people in their success and think that it must have been easy for them, or, you know, maybe they have something that we don't have, and we kind of compare ourselves to where they are. And we all have our journey, and to be persistent in those hard moments. We had recently a moment we've been working towards this expansion, and we had something just really that we've been working on for 8 or 9 months just come to a screeching halt, and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars and months and time into this project for it to crumble. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Like, do I want to do this? And do I want to start this whole thing over again? Like, do I want to consciously choose this for myself right now? And I had a good like 2 or 3 day pity party about it. And then we got our solution focused hat on and got to work. And we actually, you know, salvaged the situation. But man, those tough moments will really wear you down. I think the thing about Momwell that is such an important piece is that it has such a strong mission woven into it that I have a very strong why for why I'm building the company. So on the tough days, it's like, but the impact we are having is so important. And imagine the impact that we can have if we can really, you know, scale it to the goal that we have. So having a why in what you're building, to me, is what keeps me going.
And I was about to say the same thing to you, like the people you're helping and the difference that you're going to make and the access to care that you're going to give, even if we get all these glitchy things and they don't work, you have to go back to look, you're making this wave of difference. And that ripple effect goes a really long way. Do you know what I mean? In our society, in our communities. And when you make changes like that, they're hard. And, you know, we've seen it in our own work. There was no one really doing this women's health, you know, prenatal, postpartum, pelvic health, really caring about women throughout their lifespan. And it's really easy at points in time to be like, well, why are we doing all this? You know, like this is like, whew, you know, but I think when you see, you know, those women that actually have had a higher quality of life because of what you believed in and what you dreamed of and what you know to be true, you really say, okay, this is why we're doing it. And yes, it doesn't matter. We're all going to have adversity. And we're going to have pity parties some days. And believe me, we do at our house occasionally too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay, because I think what you do is you dig deeper, right? And you go down deeper to maybe a better solution than you actually had before. And a better way to work through something or actually get the vision of something that's even better than maybe what you were at. So I applaud you. And if you ever want to have a pity party, call me and I'll
I know. We'll commiserate together. I know.
I do. It's just the way it is, right?
Yeah. Okay, it's a journey. Yeah, it's a journey.
So when you think about the whole telehealth piece and virtual care, you know, in your space, because I'm assuming you did care in person before, is that right?
Yeah, before the pandemic, when I was in like children and family practice and working and supporting parents, I was in person. Yeah.
And how has it felt for you to move into this, you know, more virtual space and more telehealth type of space? Mm-hmm. I mean, has it challenged you? Have you felt like it was an easy maneuver? You know, tell us that.
I have found it to be really convenient for the population that I work with. So I have a lot of colleagues who work in still in like children and family practice and not in this space. Working with any kind of play therapy or children in a digital setting is a really difficult, you know, tall order. But parents and parenting and moms really value the convenience. And then when we're talking about postpartum moms, like pregnant or postpartum, they can be like at home in their nursery, in their rocking chair, nursing their baby or have them asleep on them and not have to get through traffic with a screaming baby in the back of the car. So for our population, it really seems to be convenient and helpful. And sometimes partner is around or support system is around and they can pop into a session and we can come up with some plans around protecting consolidated chunks of sleep or I don't know, it just allows for a little bit more of an entryway into their life. And being virtual also allows us to address some of these care deserts because 2020 moms put out like report cards for the various states and where all the care deserts are. And like our goal is to be across all 50 states, integrated with commercial payers, and then figuring out how we're going to address and integrate with Medicaid so that we can start to eliminate these care deserts. And being able to have a virtual platform to be able to do that and address those challenges really makes that feasible. So yeah, there's a lot in store. And I think that virtual therapy offers a lot of support. And then there's going to be those who maybe aren't suitable for this type of care or who prefer in-person care. And that's great. That's totally fine. But for the vast majority, I find it to be very convenient.
So, Erica, if there's one thing that you can say that you've learned by doing mom well, like what would be the biggest thing that kind of bubbles up that you're like, oh, yeah, this is the biggest, most important thing that I've learned throughout this journey as this business owner? What would it be?
As a business owner, that you don't ever have it right, quote unquote. And I guess this sort of parallels how I felt about motherhood and maybe my A-type perfectionist personality. But like just when you think you've got it figured out, things change and it requires a level of flexibility in your thinking and in your decision making that if you were rigidly sort of sold on a plan or a direction, it'd be really difficult to navigate, especially in a startup environment that's constantly changing and evolving. So I think being able to reevaluate and reassess each day with the data that I have today is something that is not what I expected, but is a skill that I have to prioritize each day.
Let me ask you this, because you know you're really tight in the maternal health component, but what I wondered is like when you look at collaborative work, what do you envision in the collaborative work, you know, looking at women, you know, in the physical, emotional, you know, spiritual realm so that they have this continuity of care? How do you see all that?
Yeah, we're actually working with UConn and UFT. They're doing a study on MomWell right now about our use of social media to distill like psychoeducational information and that impact on help-seeking behavior and things like that. And so I think that it's really important for us to be able to see, I'm losing my train of thought. Can you remind me of your question?
Yeah, just in how do you envision all of the collaborative work and, you know, like over, you know, women's, you know, their whole being? How do you see all of that working? Because you're doing such a great job with the maternal component, but how do you see all of it integrating?
Yeah. And with the study being done by UConn and UFT is being able to see the value of the psychoeducation piece. And so one of the things that I would hope for and that I would see as we start to like set a standard for care and integrate this mental health care more into just women's health, generally speaking, that there would be sort of protocols on the pregnancy end. Like, you know how we have this criteria or curriculum that we have to go through of various topics throughout our visits with our like our OB-GYN or whoever we're working with, that there would be a proactive component built into this mental health conversation, because I think that we're not doing that. We're not doing it well. And so when we do struggle, we feel really blindsided and unprepared. And then being able to have these handovers in a way that is proactive, like resources where moms know that they can go for pelvic floor physio should they have complications, or for mental health support if they have these complications. I think that often what happens is maybe your team might send them back to their primary care physician or whoever they're seeing, and that person may have no clue where to actually send them for the specialized support that they need. So I think like the education on the front end proactively so that they aren't so blindsided and shocked, and then like a more integrated system that supports all of the aspects of women's health is something we have a long way to go to get there, but that's what I hope to achieve.
Well, I know when we were at the maternal health conference and they were just talking about, you know, even just maternal death and that sort of stuff, and they were saying that first to the 42nd day was such a significant time frame. I know in our team right now, we're now seeing our postpartum moms at 3 weeks postpartum. We're not waiting for them to go back to their physician yet. Not saying that we're starting any pelvic floor work internal or anything like that, because we're not. We're actually screening them for all kinds of physical things that we already know they're doing at home, right? And we're also screening them for mental health things, you know, just going through, hey, how are you feeling? You know, so that we can cue, you know, with some of the things we've done before baby, but now after, to make sure, hey, they're still tracking okay. And that way we kind of connect with them quicker than at the 6 week mark. Because if we're not connecting till 6 weeks out, things may be already getting laid down, you know, that they might be discouraged with, or maybe they physically don't feel well, you know, and they need a little help with certain things and they're so overwhelmed that if they felt a little bit better in the physical realm, it wouldn't, you know, be so disruptive in the mental realm if their physical realm felt a little bit better. So trying to intervene a little earlier so that we actually can catch things that we might not catch, you know, as quickly. Because, you know, if we're not seeing them to 6 weeks, and I think that was a really important component. And I think that's the way, you know, when I'm talking to you about this, I just think we have to have more collaborative work together with our mental health providers. We ended up through one of our team, you know, just having a handout all about maternal mental health, you know, like in our community, hey, here's who you connect with. But I love MomWell. It's going to go on this sheet as well, because, you know, it's a way then for someone to do that at home, you know, and to maybe not, you know, if they can't get out or they, you know, those sorts of things. But I think we kind of need to, you know, start that conversation about their mental health prenatally. And now our team is doing that. And now we're continuing the conversation. Do you know what I mean? Afterwards and earlier, so that then we've kind of now taken upon ourselves, like if we're going to send someone back to their doctor, we're actually calling that doctor saying, listen, there's some signs here that just don't add up. And we're not saying, because we're not a mental health provider, but we're saying, hey, these things don't look like she looks like before. And so we want to alert you to that. And so we have a new thing in our organization. Hey, you know, you see something, you say something, and you get on the phone to their midwives, their doctors, their mental health providers. Maybe they already had, you know, all of those things to get them going faster so that we're not missing any parts of whether it's, you know, their mental, their physical, their spiritual, emotional health. We want them to thrive. And if we can't circle the wagons around them because we don't see them enough, we don't know.
Yeah. Well, and imagine if they're not engaging your care. Like, moms just fall off of this care cliff. They get, like, I was reading the APA guidelines around this, or like the, not the APA, the gynecologist guidelines around this the other day. And it's like the required is like one visit at the 6 week mark, but they recommend additional visits because of what the mortality rates have been. But if mom is not doing well, her ability to even get out the house to that visit or to even follow through on it. So we go from having, you know, monthly to biweekly to weekly appointments and all of this care focused on baby to an absolute cliff that we fall off of with no support. And I think that's like when we come back to the community and the sort of light touch interventions that we have, that we like to keep people kind of circling our community and knowing like, hey, if things do hit the fan, we're here. But in the meantime, here are the supports that you can have to help understand this transition and this time. No mom should fall off of a care cliff and feel unsupported in the most free fall, crazy transition time of her life, right? Like, she should have that support both physically and mentally, emotionally.
Well, even for sometimes they do a 6 week visit and then, you know, our providers are so busy now. They couldn't even get him back in. So what happens is that we're just sort of establishing that deeper relationship with the providers before, you know, baby even comes. Right. So that way, if there is need, we can kind of get in there and sort of circumvent quicker and have a resource and materials. And I think that's the beauty of MomWell and being able to share all that, whether they need in person, whether they can do it virtually. You know, we're just looking for ways, right, for women to be more successful after baby and more successful sort of re-engaging in their life and to just leave them alone, you know, not have any relationship. It doesn't work as well. So your MomWell will be on our educational work that's going out, because I think that's a really beautiful tool so that people have another way to, you know, whether it's softly launch into it or one-on-one right away. And that's why, you know, I was sharing with you, it's such an impressive platform and such an impressive thing. I think that there's so much need. So I don't want to keep you much longer, but I just want to ask you one more thing.
Yeah.
Your like next vision of where you really want this to go, you were talking about like an app in their pocket. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. So we have right now, we're in our rollout of our cash pay services in 15 states, and that's happening in the next 3 or 4 weeks. Then we're really focused on getting in network so that we can lower those barriers for moms. And that's on our horizon. And then we sit on a mountain of content that is self-paced and social, and turning that into a dynamic app that is more precision healthcare focused and can, you know, you can answer a couple of questions and it can serve up tools and things that you need exactly when you need it, is really our way of being able to take what we do and expand that impact even further in a really affordable and scalable way. So that's a big part of what we're raising for right now, is how to really utilize that technology piece, because we have all the content. We've got mountains of it, but making it in a real dynamic, personalized roadmap and journey is the big piece that I think we are building towards.
Oh, that's so exciting. I love it. That's great. Well, yeah. Good. Well, I so appreciate you being with me today and just learning more about MomWell and more about who you are. And you've done an amazing job. And it's just, you know, to look at all of that, you know, all of those mothers that are actually being able to interact with you and see things and have that whole comfort to know that they're not alone and there's other moms just like them. And then if they need help, that it's available to them in all these different ways. Thank you so much for your time and energy for moms all over the world. It's a really important thing.
Yeah, thank you so much. Likewise for the work that you're doing. And I look forward to continuing our relationship and our conversations about how we can support each other. Yeah,
absolutely. I love it. Thanks so much, Erica, for being on the show. And I know we'll have lots of questions and we'll be talking again, I'm sure. So
yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks.
Okay, bye.